This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
Kevin, is what Mostert did on Sunday, and I know people are like, hold on, who's Mostert? The running back for San Francisco.
No, not Mozart.
Is what he did on Sunday proof that running has value, or are the Cowboys still doing it wrong? I know Jeff Kavanaugh is trying to get rid of the running back that runs the ball. But
hold on. Is he? I feel like that's been misrepresented. I think he's trying to get rid of the high-paid, high-drafted running back, not trying to eliminate running backs altogether.
I said the running back that runs the ball. He wants to throw the football to the okay. running back, but he doesn't want to hand the football off. He thinks it's a low-value play.
I tried, Jeff.
Okay, and you know what? You're right about that, too. Paying a running back big money is part of his, is not part
still
of his
not
plan.
Mozart.
so soothing.
But there,
his mixtape is fire.
Look at the running backs for the two Super Bowl teams right now. And I know Tevin Coleman got a nice deal, and like he was part of a very good crew of running backs this year. But Mostert was really...
Yeah, Tevin Coleman ain't the reason they're going right. to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, the 220 yards from Mostert on Sunday, 4 touchdowns, 29 carries. He was passed up by 6 teams, Kevin.
He was, like was cut.
He was on 6 different teams and cut. And I got the list of all the running backs that were on those teams they chose instead of him. Okay. It is relaxing, though. With Ezekiel Elliott, he got his big contract in the offseason, and Jeff took the opposition to it. You took the opposition to paying big money, but you were also like, look, it's your guy. It's your best player.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and keep the running back because you like the talent,
yes.
right? That being said, if everything works correctly, can you do it without this guy that's supposed to be the talent? Because what did the talent get you this year?
Exactly. Man, I'm telling you, like, I like your question, but I don't think that this is further proof that the running back is the answer. I think this is further proof that the Cowboys did this whole thing all wrong.
Okay.
Like, I think this is proof that you by no means need... I mean, look at it. Who going in to the weekend was the elite running back you could find in the universe? It was Derrick Henry.
Yes.
His team ain't playing in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And who was the most irrelevant person that most people never even heard of? It was Mostert.
And that lends credence, Kevin, I think, and I've said that word twice today now, to the idea that the quarterback is so important, right? Like, I think that you see Tannehill was not the quality of Pat Mahomes.
Sure.
But is Garoppolo the quality of Aaron Rodgers?
No.
But somehow their running game was able to do it without a star running back.
Yep.
And maybe it's because they got lucky. Their defense has some players on that side of the ball. They were not a 4-12 team last year, right? 2-14. They were not that team that was able to, they weren't that kind of team, but they were missing their quarterback. And so they land in a spot where they are able to add a Bosa to the team and some other players. And it turns out those other players are pretty good. So that the two, looking at these two things, I think is just continued proof that the right leadership, the right players can all culminate into a great season.
Okay.
I don't know if either of these two teams are going to be back to the Super Bowl for the next 15 years or the next 5 years.
But if you had to pick one, surely you would
probably
say the Chiefs, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So, but I think I always love hearing Fish say there are multiple ways to skin a cat and multiple ways to win a Super Bowl.
Sounds like a psychopath.
And you're right about that. And I think that what I'm seeing is there is proof that you can do it in different ways.
Sure.
Different manners.
Okay, so I should not be alarmed then before we dive into that part of it. Because the first part of your conversation makes me think that I should be alarmed that the Cowboys have clearly not gone about this the right way. So what you're saying is there is not necessarily a right way. So while they're not going the let's just pick up whatever running back and we can make it happen way, that doesn't mean they're screwed.
Right. And
I need you to say yes or else I'm trouble.
You're right.
Okay.
I'll tell you you're right. Here's the other thing, though. I think the Cowboys pay players for different reasons sometimes.
Okay.
And one of the things is like you have an infallible argument. Is that the right word here?
I mean, I hope so.
In DeMarcus Lawrence. And that your argument is you paid him to get sacks.
Correct.
And nobody can dispute that he didn't get the sacks this year.
Correct.
That argument right there, there's no way for me to defeat that argument. However, I think the Cowboys pay for leadership sometimes too. And I think that DeMarcus Lawrence is a leader.
I hope they didn't pay anybody else on this team for leadership.
I think they did, and I think he failed them.
Who's that?
Jalen Smith.
Yes. I mean, like, let's just throw it out there.
But before, and that's a different time, but I think they paid Ezekiel Elliott because they think he's a leader too. And they really do think he's one of those guys that is, and go back, let's go look at the Rangers. Right? Why did the Rangers pay Elvis Andrus?
Yeah, leadership.
They wanted him to be a leader, and then he comes into to training camp or spring training fat. And they're like, dude, that's not what you're supposed to be doing. Ian Kinsler left because he didn't want to be part of that.
Yeah.
Luka just has that, right? Dirk had to grow into it. I think that the Cowboys said, you are this physically. You do all these things. But now that you have the money, this is the extra responsibility that comes along with it. And you have to go, you're supposed to live up to it. Rather than dangling the carrot and say, go get it, they say, we've paid you now. You need to take it to the next level as a leader too. And so I think that's one of the reasons that they gave I think those go into some of the reasons that they pay them, because they believe if we pay these guys, they get that status because they are that guy. Now, do you doubt that Lawrence and Zeke are?
Yes.
Okay. Because of stats or because of what you saw on the field?
Because of what I saw on the field. It doesn't have to do with just stats, because I know somebody's going to text in, dude, if you don't think DeMarcus Lawrence is a leader, you're crazy. But I'm here to argue that nobody on this team right now should be secure in their leadership role.
I agree.
Like, this team failed on every level in 2019. Like, if you take the totality of it, I know there were certain aspects that succeeded, but the totality of the 2019 Dallas Cowboys season can be described no other way except for this: failure. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. Your coach got fired. Most of your coordinators got fired because this thing failed across the board. So I'm not inclined to think that, well, whoever the leaders were, they did a great job. No, I'm not going to say that. So
from the six, I don't think the late leaders did a great job either. From the 6-8-2, considering all the off-field issues with Zeke, I highly doubt they paid him to be a leader. I disagree.
I do too.
I think that one of the reasons
I think they're right.
All right. I think that they said, okay, we're past this off-field stuff, right? We've gotten past what happened in college and all that stuff. We've got past the suspension. You're heading forward. You had a full season. All right, and we rely on you. We rely on you to be a guy that's in the locker room before anybody gets there, that leaves the locker room after everybody else is gone. That's what we're expecting to get. We're expecting to get Michael Irvin-type work ethic. And that's something that they loved about Jason Garrett, because Jason Garrett had that work ethic, right? So they thought that people would just naturally gravitate to that. I do think, though, that there are some of the guys that have to be held more accountable, Kevin, and that's what you're speaking to. And I think that's something that McCarthy has to instill in this team this season, because more than just the scheme, they have something else they have to accomplish. They have something else they have to live up to. And I know being a Cowboy is hard. Like, it's difficult to be a Dallas Cowboy because, you know, the spotlight's always on you and everything. But I think they paid Ezekiel Elliott for leadership. And I think DeMarcus Lawrence got paid for leadership too. And I think that maybe Jalen Smith was thrust to the forefront because of it. Missing Tyrone Crawford, Kevin, you talk to people inside the Cowboys organization, and I know that you didn't like always love him through his career, and I know how I felt about him. I felt that he wasn't as talented as some other people, but he did win in his matchups, and I love that about him. But I did not realize, and I think everybody underestimated his leadership role on that team and that defense.
There's no question that I did.
And, you know, my question then was, well, I mean, why he was there, right? He was still part of it, even though he was injured, but what have we been told? If you're injured,
you're dead. Like, that is literally something that Mark Schlereth told us. And I'm not going to lie, man, I don't want to be hearing that from somebody who can't go out there. With all due respect to Tyrone Crawford, I'm not questioning his ability to be a leader. I'm questioning people's desire to listen if you can't go.
Yeah.
Like, do you really want to hear a hype-up speech from somebody who can't do it? That I always thought that was a great example of, like, people, like, let's just say you work at a regular job. Like, you work at Best Buy or whatever. Don't you have more faith in your leader if I would always tell people this at Blockbuster. I was like, there's nothing I'll ask you to do that I won't do too. Mm-hmm. And so if you're a leader out on the field and you're like, hey, you need to do this, I'm like, cool. Can you play? No, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
I can still go.
Yeah. No, and that's I think that was missing. That was an integral part that was missing this season. Somebody said, does leadership score points or does talent score points?
Of course it does.
You got to be talented. I still think you have to be talented to be a leader.
And just for the record, of course it does.
All we've ever heard about Dak from the 267 is how great of a leader he is. He's the most important player. I haven't paid him yet. That's part of the business side of things. One of the reasons they're about to pay him as much money as they're going to is because of his leadership. You hear Jerry Jones say it with us every single week. You hear Stephen Jones say it with us every single week. One of the reasons they do not doubt Dak as a future quarterback here is because of the leadership. Part of the business is the negotiation that's going on between them, though. Oh, that's going to happen, though.
So the thing that I wanted to talk about alongside of that is, and I know like a lot of those people who made the decision are out the door, but do you trust the current, do you trust this organization to make the correct leadership decisions?
And this wasn't even really the first part of this discussion. I think that Mike McCarthy has a lot of control right now. Because, and I think Jeff's right, Jerry doesn't want a lot of that blame right now. So he's doing the, I am the owner, we are the GM, here are all the assets you need. Do you need a free agent? We'll go find whatever it is you need. You need coaches? We'll find you coaches. I think they're supplying all the resources and saying you need to be the guy that people fear, look to for discipline, need structure from. I think that they've given him that, and I think that he realizes the responsibility, and I think he's a good coach, Kevin. You don't win a Super Bowl without, you know, and getting to that point just on luck. I'm not going to say that Aaron Rodgers carried that team to the Super Bowl. Yes, they worked well together, but Mike McCarthy was right there with the mix of it. So I think they got the right group, and I think highly of Will McClay, but that's something that they have to do. They have to discuss, you know, what kind of players they're going to get, and we'll talk a little more about that at noon. But I think that, Kevin, they have the right people in place for a team that already has the talent that I think should go. Now, they're missing some talent in some certain places, and draft is what we're going to be getting into real strong, real heavy here soon, because the draft's going to be very important to what the Cowboys do this year. But I think they have the right guys to make the decisions. Now, you know me. I think you're always trying to create competitions for leadership. One of the best things I heard about Urban Meyer.
Gross.
Hey! He's not our coach. Don't worry about it. But during the Aaron Hernandez thing, Urban Meyer said the first trait he looked for in a player was, can you compete? Will you compete? Then I'll worry about what kind of football player you're going to be. And that's interesting. That goes all the way back to, I'm coaching 8-year-olds in basketball, and I ask one thing out of them, give me everything you got. Because if you're giving everything you got, then at least you're doing the best you can. And that's all I'm asking out of these guys. Did you see the guys doing the best they could this year? I didn't. And so that's what I want to see. Mike McCarthy make the guys compete for leadership roles. Show why they deserve it. Be accountable for those leadership roles and then hold others on the team accountable for those as well.
Would this work? Would Mike McCarthy then, from that perspective, would you respect this as a player? Let's say you're one of the Cowboys. You're sitting in the room. Mike McCarthy, I come in and I have a very simple message. Like, I parrot your message. All I'm asking for is the absolute best that you've got. And I just want to add to that, if you're not willing to give your best every single game, every single play to this team, will you please stand up and get the hell out of my locker room right now?
Nobody's leaving.
But does that message work for you?
Now that nobody's left the room, now that everybody's stayed because they're too afraid to leave, now that they're all still there, now they're accountable.
Okay, because then my follow-up is going to be, good, I'm glad that none of you left, but guess what? I have a say in this decision as well, and if I see you're not giving your best, I'll throw you out myself.
That's exactly the way that it needs to go, man.
Will it?
Because yes, it has to, man. He can't walk in and say, hey, I'm going to be your best friend. They have to be held accountable in some way. And every decision they make from step one to the Super Bowl has to be with that in mind.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. Coming up next, the Mavs have some interesting numbers, and THJ is the complimentary player we've been begging for. We'll do it next right here on the Fan.
I think the perfect coach, Kevin, can take the statistics, take all the numbers, dissect them, figure out what's important, and then utilize them in the manner that he sees fit to go out there and win.
Okay.
All right, so I think it's a combination, and I loved when Banny said this, looking a guy in the eye and realizing what the moment is, but also knowing that the ratios and percentages in your favor are the ones you need to go with too. So whatever that combination is, how you balance that out, don't just go with the balance of numbers. Use both of them.
Okay.
But I do love numbers sometimes, ooh, Kevin. And I think that Tim Hardaway Jr. is the third man that you've been begging for, Kevin.
Yes.
You've been begging for a third man for a long time.
Since the NWO days.
And what?
That's pretty progressive of you.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. But here's the first statistic over the weekend that I saw. And I know how you're probably going to figure a way out to kill Luka with this information.
What?
But I saw this from Bobby Corrala over the weekend, and that dude's all over it, man. He's freaking phenomenal. He said the Mavs are 13-1 this season when the five-man lineup of Luka, Hardaway, Finney-Smith, Kleba, and Powell play at least 1 second together. 13-1.
I don't know why we wouldn't just deliver that information to Rick Carlisle, and he's like, got it. And so tip off, that would be the lineup, and then you could instantaneously make substitutions.
We're winning this game. It's
yeah.
easy. That group has a 129.5 offensive rating.
Good God.
And a plus 42.8 net rating.
Oh, my God. That offensive rating is insane.
That's pretty good?
Yes.
That's only 82 minutes, though, Shippy. So, like, don't yeah. go. That's small sample size.
Yeah, yeah.
In a larger...
It'd probably be better if you replaced Luka, too, according to Kevin.
Yeah, that's what Kevin says. In a larger sample size, the Mavs are 12-6 with a 121.4 offensive rating.
Still amazing.
Plus 10.9 when Doncic, Hardaway, Finney-Smith, Porzingis, and Powell play together.
Okay, so Powell... obviously is playing a big part in this as well, which we talked about in terms of the trade.
And Finney-Smith too, I guess, because those three with Luka. So either if it's Porzingis or Porzingis or Kleba in the starting lineup, the Hardaway being a starter now has become a big deal.
Sure.
And Kevin, when he got here, he said, I think I can be the Michael Finley to the big three.
Great.
And your thought immediately was there are a lot of things you have to fix.
And the number one thing that he had to fix was his efficiency, because Tim Hardaway Jr. throughout his career has been known as a chucker. And we use that phrase a lot. And if you're not familiar with that phrase, that's somebody who they score a lot of points because they shoot a lot of shots. Some people will lobby that against Kobe Bryant throughout his career, but especially in the latter stages of his career, there's no doubt that Kobe turned into a chucker who was a low percentage shooter but scored a lot of points because they took a lot of shots. So you could make that argument against Tim Hardaway Jr. at certain times. So when he averaged 19.1 points per game for the Knicks, like, that's tremendous. He did it on 39% shooting. Ouch. Like, that's not going to work. So here, this season, he's shooting 43.3%. Would you still like that to improve, like 3%? Sure. However, that's the second best shooting percentage of his entire career. And then you go to the three-point line. He's shooting 39%, which I believe is 7 percentage points better than Luka. But 39% from three is tremendous. If you get to 40, well, holy crap, let's go. And so he is being ultra efficient compared to previous seasons.
And that's great. And I want to give Callie Kaplan from the Morning News a lot of credit for the story that we're discussing right now, Kevin, because she even broke down this part of his game. And here's the difference. When he came back from his stress fracture, he was on the bench. And he'd been a bench player before in his career. But
when he started with the Knicks, yeah.
In 13 games as a bench player, he shot 34.4% from the field, 29.5% from three, and 73% on free throws. In 26 games as a starter this year, and you just told me the numbers, right? Here are his numbers with 26 games as a starter. 46.9% from the field, 43.1% from three, and 81% on free throws.
All right, I'm going to tell you something right now.
He's averaging 16.5, 3.3 rebounds, and an assist, 1.8 assists per game.
Look, what you just described, my friend, is that is the optimum efficient version of Tim Hardaway Jr. If you look.
Now, that's as a starter. So, yes. And we saw the starting lineups have been very efficient, and it's with him in the starting lineup now.
If you get that version of Tim Hardaway Jr., I said outside of Luka and Kristaps, the Mavericks didn't have another top 100 player. That makes Tim Hardaway a top 75 player in the league. I would have to think it over a little bit. Maybe I say pushing for top 60. If you're shooting 47% from the field, 43% from three, 81% from the line, and averaging 16.5 points a game, you'll be an excellent number three on any team in the league. Now, like, you can argue some teams have, like, different, you know, stacks of star players. I'm just saying, as a theoretical number three player on any team in the league, you fit as a championship-level number three. You fit as a Michael Finley. And I think we all agreed, like, Michael Finley would have been a good enough player to be the number three option on most championship teams. And so that's awesome. The other reason that I'm really excited about that is Tim Hardaway Jr. is your old good player. He's 27. So, like, think about that. But he's your...
Jimmy, how old are you?
29.
Yeah. Oh, so right. you would be grandpa on this team.
So I could teach him some things.
Tim Hardaway. About how things you...
Back in my day.
DVD player.
Back in my day, we shot a lot more tubes.
Yeah.
God, I would love it. We used to post it up. And
we got on the ladder to get the ball out of the peach bucket.
Have you heard of the triangle offense?
Oh, my God. And you know one player there. Be like, oh, Lord. So he's 27, and he's the year old really good player, which is phenomenal. Think about across the rest of the league, people's old, really good players, and the vast majority of them are going to be far older than 27. So that's why I said at the very beginning of the season, THJ, he's a key to this thing.
Yeah, and here's what happened. He became a starter when Seth Curry got sick. So Seth Curry was in that starting lineup, and Kevin, you could say Seth Curry's been good for this team, but you're... For whatever reason, and I don't know what the reason is, as a starter, Hardaway is more efficient than he is off the bench. Now, Kevin, what did we see in Rick Carlisle? What's he always loved? He's always loved guys off the bench that come in and just kind of keep the level hot.
Sure.
And that's why J.J. Barea has been around, because J.J. Barea can come off the bench and just roll out there and do what he does. That's why they took, like, the Mavericks have always loved the six man. Go back. They tried to make Antoine Jameson a sixth man. They wanted a sixth man that could always come in and provide just whatever it was. And Jason Terry, like, fit the role perfectly. And while he was the sixth man, he also played a lot of minutes, right? Like, he may not have started,
sure,
but he got into rhythm really quickly as soon as he stepped on the court. So he was able to be a sixth man. And guess what? He was there on the court in the last 5 minutes of championship games too. Yeah. So I think that's like... Some people get the mindset of, I'm not starting, I'm struggling because I'm doing something wrong, where Jason Terry embraced the role. And I think that Seth Curry will be the kind of guy that's like, nah, man, I'm still going to get my minutes out there. And I think it's the perfect reversal of positions and roles for those guys, because I think Seth will continue to do his thing while you're also, and probably excel against lesser talent while he's running up against twos, while Tim Hardaway Jr. is excelling efficiently while he's starting with this team. And that's the thing, too, is as Rick Carlisle said, they're 18-8 with Hardaway starting. Carlisle says he's an NBA starter. There's no question about that. The question was whether it was going to be better for him or for the team having him play a six-man role or to be a starter. And we got to take an honest look at the significant numbers of games. It was very clear this is the way that we should go. So they took that information and said, it's clear that as a starter, he's better than this. So let's optimize what we can do with the team.
And if you think about that, all right. So, like, let's take a look at the problems the Mavericks have had this year. They're the worst good team in the league at home. They're absolutely the worst clutch team in the league. Their second best player has already missed 10 consecutive games. And they didn't exactly know what to do with THJ. All fair criticisms,
yes,
of the Mavericks season thus far. They're 2.5 games out of being the number two seed in the West. So...
Yes, things have gone wrong, and they've been able to adapt.
Exactly. They're ahead of the Rockets. Now, as it stands right now, I wouldn't be super thrilled because you would open on the road against the Clippers in the playoffs. However... You could easily open against the Jazz and the Nuggets. Definitely more winnable series, but You're also, check this out, you're also 2.5 games away from hosting the Oklahoma City Thunder in the first round of the playoffs. And then you know who you would probably play next? Mm. The Jazz or the Rockets. And you would have home court advantage in the second round.
And you're going to need, that's the thing, you've needed all this depth, but it's also grown and learned throughout this season, man.
And
to be able to compete with any of those teams.
No, absolutely. And I don't think like you have to make a run to the Western Conference Finals or anything like that to make this season a success. I just think you need to put together a competent playoff showing. But if I told you right now that you were in position where you would host the Oklahoma City Thunder in the first round, and in the second round you would host either the Jazz or the Rockets, I think, or the Nuggets, and I think you would take
our minds.
You would be like, oh my God, are we going to play the winner of Lakers Clippers in the NBA Western Conference Finals? And my answer would be, you might.
And you know what? There's another thing, too. At this point, there are a lot of teams that are going to be envious of things that you have, right? And they're going to looking at their things and saying, man, I wish we had one of those.
Your old good player is 27.
I wish we had a Hardaway Jr. I wish we had a Dorian Finney-Smith. I wish we had a Kleba. I wish we had a Powell. They're going to be guys that are going to be and remember, the Spurs used to do that. They have some depth that you were like, how the hell do they have a guy that can do that and compete in the playoffs? You've never heard of him. Where'd he come from? And that's what the Mavs have built. And, I mean, it obviously centers around how good Luka is. I mean, just look at the minutes together with all these guys. It all centers around what Luka does to make guys better. But when you hear Luka say something like this, Kevin, when he's talking about Tim Hardaway Jr., it feels like when you pass to him, he's going to make every shot.
Oh my God.
That's confidence that you can't get, that like comes with playing together and comes with being, that you can't just replicate.
Excellent point from the 682. Do we really want home court? That's a fair point.
Yes!
And that's a fair point. But I mean, we have a much better record on the road. So here's the way I would look at it. Your top three players, and that's why you want Kristaps to come back and be so good, because it goes beyond just like, oh, hey, we're going to start winning more games. Check it out. Here's what I would pitch to you as a franchise. Our third best player is 27 and probably top 75 in the league. Our second best player has and this is where he's the key right there. Let's say he gets healthy and does his best the rest of the year. You can say our second best player is 24, top 30 in the league. Our best player is 20. And you could make a strong argument as top three in the league.
This is sick.
We have a top three coach in the league.
What are you doing?
And
he's top one.
Okay. Well, sorry. I can't go with you on that.
Punch him.
And we have a very player-friendly owner. That's what I'm selling to you. And we just made it to the Western Conference Finals. That's the last part that you're like, ooh.
Did this just become the most fun team in the NBA? Name a more fun team right now.
Okay, I would still argue the Bucks just because of the way they're curb stomping everybody. But like,
are they fun though?
They are. Have you watched that team? They are super fun. Like, they do weird things in the basketball
court. But they're
in
Milwaukee.
I know, but their alley oops come from every conceivable dimension, and you're like, what the hell just happened? You have a giant running up and down the court and trucking people, and the Bucks are really fun to watch. But I think the Nuggets are fun to watch. But sure, the Mavericks are easily a top five fun team to watch in the league. No doubt about it. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it's time for Gridiron Gravy, where Corey's nemesis makes the Pro Bowl. We'll do that next right here on The Fan. But before we do, you want to win a little bit of cash? 72881 right now. Text AIRPLANE. That's AIRPLANE to 72881 if you need help. I know it's a long word. AIRPLANE. Text AIRPLANE to 72881 for your opportunity to win $1,000 as part of our national. That's true. Don't text Jack. Text AIRPLANE.
Catch flights, not
chance
feelings.
Chance to win $1,000 as part of our national contest.
Keep listening for your chance to win $1,000. Keep your ears on it. That'll be coming up in the noon hour. Kevin, right now, though, it is time to go around the entire NFL. We bring the best NFL stories to you every day. The headlines from your favorite sport. With some gridiron gravy.
And we start with terrible news for you, Corey. terrible news for you. They added a couple of names to the Pro Bowl.
I don't need bad news, Kevin.
One of them, Minnesota Vikings quarterback Kirk Cousins. Your nemesis is in the Pro Bowl. What is your instantaneous reaction to this devastating news?
NFC by 100.
He had a good season, man. He really did.
Does it hurt to say that?
I'm interested to know now that his offensive coordinator has moved on to the Cleveland Browns, if they can replicate that again. But yeah, I don't want to take anything away from what he did this season. I still don't think that he's that level of quarterback. I think he'll always kind of be hovering right there and not great category. But they had a hell of a season, and Dalvin Cook's health was a big factor this year for them. The stuff that they were able to do underneath and the ability to get the ball to his tight ends, especially with Thielen being hurt as much as he was this year, Dalvin Cook was so important to what they did. So, yeah, congratulations to him. You win this round, Kirk Cousins.
So there's a couple of changes for the Pro Bowl. So this is after you score, if you want to try a onside kick. The scoring team, Team A, has the following option. Team A may elect to give Team B the ball at the 25-yard line on a 1st and 10, beginning a new series of downs, obviously. Or Team A may elect to take the ball at their own 25, and you get a 4th and 15.
So they're just getting rid of the onside kick altogether?
Correct.
Why? Because it doesn't work, or because of injuries?
I think because of the changes that they made, it's just not exciting, and they're looking to make it exciting. So,
God, I used to love that play so much.
Well,
remember Daryl Johnston collected that one in San Francisco.
Okay, but how hype is this one going to be now? You get the ball at your own 25, and whatever you do, that's what happens. So think about it. You could theoretically throw a 75-yard touchdown pass and score on that play. Or you could get sacked and the other team takes over at your 10-yard line and anywhere in between.
All right, so here's my problem then. I don't like the fact that you just changed the rule for this one time. Why can't I do that all the time?
I think that's why they're trying it out here.
No, what I'm saying is I want to be able to try it out. I want to be able to do it after I've...
You want it to be make it, take it?
I want
it,
yes. I just scored
You're
a touchdown.
You're not changing the NFL to make it take
I
it.
I just scored on you on my first drive, and I don't want to give the ball back to you. I want to score 14, or I want the chance to.
What if they only made that available for the first drive? How many people do you think? But okay.
I do it every time.
Okay.
I do it every time.
And it's only for the first half. So if you defer, you lose that opportunity. Nobody would defer anymore, right?
Right. No, you'd take it, and then you'd take it again. You just take it and take it and take it every time, every chance you get. No, but that's the thing, man. I if you're getting rid of the kickoff, why even have it throughout the game? So because
I do agree with
because
that.
I'm better than this team and I have a lead against them. You're changing the rules at the for the last part of the game so they can try and catch up. That's not fair. I was beating them. I should have had an opportunity to get the ball back after I scored a touchdown at some point.
All right.
So that's why I'm out on the rule. I do like the excitement that comes along with it, though. Like I really do, because 4th and 15 is a blast. And now you've essentially, if they can't convert, you've shortened the game because now there's no overtime. The team gets the ball back with a minute left, and you can go.
And you get at like their 25-yard line.
Yeah.
Don't worry, I'm one vote away from infiltrating the rules committee.
Okay.
I've been working my way up through the NFL organization.
Steven's
the
one that's keeping you out?
Yes. And then Jerry, well, he's on my side now after the incident.
Now that you got your act together.
Exactly. I finally took his advice. Who do you think is the favorite? This should be easy. Who do you think is the favorite to win Super Bowl MVP?
Frank Gore.
Yep.
Stupid. It's Pat Mahomes. It's not Tony Romo. Why would that be Tony Romo?
Is he calling this? Is it Fox or CBS?
I think it's Fox.
Why don't you open your mind a little bit?
Then he's not calling the game, Kevin, so there is a chance.
Yeah. He also told us that AFC game was going to be tightened down to the last second. All right.
You can't predict everything.
Pat Mahomes is the even money bet to win Super Bowl MVP. Let's say you want to expand it out a little bit. Who do you want to bet on to win Super Bowl MVP? Maybe we can get you some cash.
Mostert.
I think Mostert is a great play right there. He's 8-1.
Wow. I'll bet $2 on Mostert.
Oh, Nick Bosa.
I was gonna say Bosa too.
Nick Bosa is 20-1.
So you could have a little like Malcolm Smith action there.
What about Chris Jones?
No.
The punter?
No,
the defensive player for the Chiefs.
What about Honey Badger?
Ooh. I think Honey Badger might make a couple plays, but I just don't think he'll be the MVP.
Yeah, I don't think he cares either.
He does care.
Honey Badger don't care.
He cares now. So there was a time, that's true, he didn't care. Now he cares. Honey Badger and Chris Jones and Richard Sherman, 80-1. Sammy Watkins, 40-1. The problem with Sammy Watkins is I don't care if Sammy Watkins catches 3 passes for 240 yards and 3 touchdowns because they were all 80-yard passes. You know Pat Mahomes is winning that award.
Yeah.
It's not going to Sammy Watkins.
What about Deebo Samuel?
Deebo Samuel is 30-1. Because you know they don't want to give it to Garoppolo, although he's second on the board.
What about Kittle? Did you say Kittle
already?
Kittle
is 16-1, along with Kelce and Tyreek Hill. I'm just saying, there's money to be made out there. Basically, if you think that the winner of the MVP is going to be anybody besides Pat Mahomes, there is value out there for you.
Here's the thing that my biggest hope for this Super Bowl is that it's not two teams that are out there, like, playing the chess match.
And the commercials don't suck.
Well, that too, Shippy. But, like, the chess match last year, it was brilliant, right? Wade Phillips and Bill Belichick devised the perfect schemes to stop offenses, right? They were two great offenses. They couldn't score. And I just want two teams that are out there that are like, let's just put on a freaking show and just see how it goes, man. But that's part of, like, you're a defensive coordinator. You're paid to stop teams, so they can't do that. But I want to see two games that are just aggressive and after it.
Let's move to the Cleveland Browns. Most of this quote is true, except for the part that I'll let you determine that I added. This is from Hugh Jackson. Quote, my coaching record over 32 years speaks for itself. I don't think 2.5 years at Cleveland should tarnish my whole career. Because seriously, it's Cleveland. Have you seen that asshole of an organization? Nobody can win there.
You just, right after he says it's Cleveland, then
nope,
they just go
the
with
the first part is 31 years he's been in. No, I'm just kidding. It really is. It really was the last part. But he said, I don't think 2.5 years at Cleveland should tarnish my whole career. Because at Cleveland, he was 3-36-1.
Wow. He was terrible there. Didn't he walk off into the river or something?
That was the last we ever heard from him until today.
And then he had a bunch of positivity when he came back.
Exactly.
Gross. But he walked off into the river because he said if they lost all their games or something.
Yeah,
because
he said, we will not go 1-15 again. And then they went 0-16, and he was like, well, guess I'm going.
Guess I
gotta
do it.
To be fair, they did not go 1-15 again. I would argue semantically that he's fine.
Okay.
Let's go back to the Super Bowl. Joe Montana, he knows who's going to win. You ready?
Yeah.
He said, quote, well, it's guaranteed my team will win.
Oh, yeah, he played for both teams.
Yes.
A lot of people forget that, Kevin. Much like Steve DeBerg was drafted by the Dallas Cowboys and then later played for the Chiefs, Joe Montana was drafted by the 49ers and then ended his career as a Chief, where he played, I do believe, at least 1 year with Mike McCarthy.
He did, and I think that was the year that they made it to the AFC Championship game, and
welcome,
part of me,
America,
thought the only good side if the Cowboys lost to the 49ers is if the Chiefs won, and if old man Joe Montana said, F you 49ers, and beat them, and I'd be like,
awesome.
What's up now?
It would have been a great day.
It didn't happen, though. Nope. Let's go to Case Keenum, who was really, this quote is, I don't know, like 15 words long. It goes a lot of different directions.
Okay, all right, I'm in.
Are you going to be back with Washington? Get ready for a roller coaster. I have no idea.
I love roller coasters.
I would say probably not. I can't tell the future, though. So he said, that's I don't point. Know, no, and then I don't know again. So there's a whole wave of emotion happening in there.
He's probably looking at the situation, right? Saying, okay, the guy that brought me in was probably Bruce Allen, right?
Yeah.
And he's gone. They have a quarterback they want to move on with for the future. The head coach, I don't know very well. That's probably what's going into that, Kevin, is he's probably right. He doesn't know. But at the same time, he thinks that it's likely that he won't. But who knows what's going to happen? They might offer him something. So all the options are the right answer.
Okay.
He can, wow. And that's what he can say when he sits down with the Redskins front office or Rivera. He can say, I gave every answer I could possibly give.
Yeah. Except for he didn't really say yes. He said, I don't know, no, and I don't know. He didn't add, I'd love to come back or anything like that. That's the only thing.
Should have done
missing.
That part, yeah.
That's the only thing missing from his answer. All right, let's go back to the Cleveland Browns, where they're going to hire Bill Callahan as their offensive line coach. Obviously, former Cowboys coach in the mix there.
Let me add this to this that Case Keenum thing real quick, Kevin. I know you want to move on. He didn't want to be a liar.
That's true.
So by
I
saying
respect
yes,
that.
He didn't. He would have lied.
That. He goes, nobody would love to be back like here.
Just,
come on.
If he just said, I like it here, he would have lied.
Yeah, that's fair. That's very fair. Let's go back to the Super Bowl. Tevin Coleman has a dislocated shoulder coming out of the NFC Championship game. However, the 49ers are saying there is a possibility and they are hopeful that he will be able to play in that game.
Pop that sucker back into place, man. Let's go.
It's the Super Bowl. Now, somebody has already made a big bet on the Super Bowl. They bet the Chiefs on the money line. Now, the money line, if you're not familiar, that takes the spread out of the equation and it's just straight up who's going to win.
Is it CNBC or?
No. I mean, that's yes, but that's very well done. Why do you know that? But that's not the money line I'm talking about. So a bettor put $150,000 on the Chiefs. A bettor put $150,000 on the Chiefs via the money line. So he'll win $120,000 if they beat the 49ers. No point spread on that, as the Chiefs are favored by about a point and a half.
How do you think this money, there, the spread will it change at all next week? And will the money start? Who's the money going to come in late on?
I think the money is going to come in really late on the 49ers. But I would not be surprised to see that, because people love offense though. I would not be surprised to see that point spread bounce up to 2 or 2.5 for the Chiefs next week, because the Chiefs all obviously bring the offense. But I bet you get some wise guy money in the last couple days on the Niners.
Do offenses typically cover?
These
are the trends, Kevin, that we need to
figure
out.
That's a great question. I don't know the answer in terms of the Super Bowl, but I know like 70% of people bet the over, because that's more fun.
Kevin, find the answer to my questions, and we're going to win some damn money.
Okay, I will get you an answer on the trend for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Sorry.
Why is he against winning money?
I feel like I've let you all down.
It's okay.
The Detroit Lions GM, because they have the number 3 pick, he said that, yeah, I'm totally comfortable and happy that Matthew Stafford is our quarterback. So, of course, the word going around is that they think that the Detroit Lions would draft a quarterback, and maybe this would be a great spot to obviously draft Tua and give him a year to sit. What?
Ryan Young posted on the Fan Tolo page that the Detroit Tigers have now drafted more Super Bowl quarterbacks than the Detroit Lions, as Patrick Mahomes was drafted by the Detroit Tigers.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
I want somebody who has the guts to ask that question at a press conference, just to see how long the GM or the coach or whoever just stares at you. Yeah, we're talking about football. Yeah, so was I. That would be my response, and just see how it goes from there. Spoiler alert, probably not well. We'll see. Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's talk the new Cowboys coach, Mike McCarthy. What kind of personnel is he actually going to be after with this organization? We'll talk about that next right here on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.